Welcome to the 17th episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Delaney. I'm a cardiologist and endurance athlete. I started this podcast to promote healthy plant-based lifestyle by interviewing authors and people along their plant-based journey and people athletically thriving on a plant-based diet. It's been quite an experience for me. I've enjoyed all the interviews. Everybody has been quite gracious. I have a registered dietitian guest this evening that I'm sure you'll enjoy. It's a little bit of different flavor, but he gives some interesting insights. Since the last podcast, I completed the Death Valley Marathon. I would highly recommend it. It is the, I would guess, true runner's marathon, and that it was small, certainly a quiet race. There were, I think, only 150 that did the full marathon, probably about that many again that did a 10K and a half marathon. We ran along a white line in Death Valley, single foul, up 13.1 and back. It was a little bit more hilly than I anticipated, a little bit more windy than I anticipated, so I didn't quite get my A finish time, but I managed to negative split the race and was happy that I hung on for my secondary goal. So it was a great race, finished happy. Everyone I ran with did well as well. So again, I highly recommend it. The race director was quite funny and humorous. Again, it was simple, no timing chips, just a clock, handheld. The aid stations were very well supported, and it was beautiful scenery, truly God's country. So again, if you're a marathon runner, put it on your bucket list. I'd certainly go back. While I was out west, I also visited True North Health Center, and was the guest of Dr. Goldhammer and Dr. Clapper for breakfast. I had a tour of the facility. It was every bit as awe-inspiring as speaking with him in the interview. They're truly doing remarkable things there. You know, people that are sick on multiple medications, transitioning them to a no oil, no sugar, no salt plant-based diet, and then fasting for periods of time as needed, and then transitioning back to a plant-based, no oil, no salt, no sugar diet. Off all their medications, quite rewarding. I hope to do some collaboration with them in the future. Hopefully get something along those lines started in Florida, even perhaps maybe get something along those lines started and hook on a destination marathon with that. So again, anybody that has any interest in finding out more, please contact me, jamiedelaney@gmail.com. Tonight's interview is with Matt Rossigno. He is a registered dietitian. He's been a vegan most of his life, starting mainly as an environmental-driven vegan teenager. He is truly a bridge between being plant-based and healthy, and as well as being an ethical animal rights environmentally active person. He's very approachable, very laid back, just a great bridge between the two communities. He has a video series out on the internet under strongesthearts.org that showcases athletes that are plant-based and doing great things and being very positive and excelling athletically. So please check that out. They're really fun short videos, about 10 minutes each. Shows what they eat, how they train, and they're very interesting from all different walks of life. Matt also co-authored the nutrition section of the book No Meat Athlete. And most recently, he has written Superfoods for Life, Cacao, Improve Your Health, and Boost Your Brain Power, and that's kind of what we talked about during the interview. When I first saw the book when it came out, I thought, you know, it's basically, I was surprised that he was going to write a book on, based on, you know, making desserts, but it couldn't be further from that. It basically traces the origin of cacao and, you know, the benefits of cacao being a flavonoid and polyphenol and, you know, how it does boost immunity, even though the cacao actually comes from the flat seed of the fruit of the cocoa tree, the cacao bean. The nibs are cracked and shelled. Some are roasted. Cacao nibs, none of the cocoa butter is removed. So they're high in fat, but they've not been shown to increase LDLs. And, you know, then if you go on to define cacao powder, it's basically grinding the shell of the cacao bean. It can again be raw or roasted. Cocoa liquor is a paste made from ground, roasted, shelled, and fermented cocoa beans. It contains cacao powder and cocoa butter. And cocoa butter is the solid removed from cocoa liquor, and that's, 100% fat. And, you know, the basics of chocolate, basically, you know, the darker the chocolate, the better it is, the more flavonoids. Milk chocolate has milk, and the chocolate part is only about 10 to 12%. White chocolate is really only cocoa butter. And there's no benefit for you. So, you know, if you are going to imbibe in chocolate, you know, try to get a fair trade, high chocolate, high cacao percentage. Interestingly, while we were in California in the Mission District, there's a place called Dandelions, and it's actually a chocolate bar factory, and it's, you can see how the chocolate bars are made, and they're all made from straight from the cocoa bean, and they roast it right there, and sugar, and that's what it makes their chocolate bar. And depending on what part of the world the bean comes from, there's an actual tasting note, so it was quite fun. But back to his book, they look at different recipes, mainly of Spanish origin, that adds cacao powder to things like enchiladas and stews, and gives a very unique flavor. I've tried some of the recipes, and they are quite unique and good. So there's some, you know, traditional type of chocolate desserts that he makes, but most of it are actually, different vegetables that are seasoned with the cacao powder. So I think you can check the book out. You'll find it very interesting. I'm going to keep making some of these recipes and try them out. It gives a little different twist on a traditional plant-based diet. I don't think that you should probably go out of your way to add cacao powder to everything, but I think it's certainly, as far as making a healthy treat, adding a little cacao powder to a smoothie, let's blend it with fruits, certainly okay, and again, have some antioxidant properties to it. So I hope you enjoyed the interview with Matt, and I'll check back in after. All right, welcome, Matt Rossigno. It's a pleasure to have you on the podcast today. He is the registered dietitian as well as author. And I first heard him on a Rich Roll podcast, and now he has a book out called Superfoods for Life, Cacao, and How to Improve Your Health. And certainly in my practice, I preach the, plant-based kind of Puritan diet, but now if I could add a little chocolate into it, people might even get more excited. So welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's always an honor to speak to my colleagues and other people in our plant-based world.
Tell me, I heard a little bit, but tell me for my audience, how you got started. You originally grew up in Pennsylvania or?
I did. I grew up in just outside Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. And I got into veganism as a teenager in the mid-90s and then ended up going to Penn State University and decided to study nutrition. And I had no idea what I was getting into.
But that wasn't originally you were a vegan, and then the plant-based nutrition world, especially in Pennsylvania, there's a lot of dairy around. So how did that go?
Yeah, it was interesting because I was involved with an animal rights group while I was in college, and we brought all sorts of speakers. We had Howard Lyman and, the rancher turned vegan, and that wasn't too long after he was on Oprah and sued for that episode. And so we brought some controversy to Penn State, but it was great. Any large group of people in one place, you can always find some people who have commonalities with.
Fantastic. And then was it your fellowship or internship that was in Loma Linda?
I went to Loma Linda for grad school, and then they have what's called a coordinated program where you do your clinical and your internship and whatnot through them. And you do some of it at Loma Linda, and then I ended up moving to Los Angeles to finish it at Cedars-Sinai.
And then did you work as a clinical dietitian or...
You know, I didn't. I went straight into public health, which was my focus at Loma Linda. So not long after finishing, I got a job that was funded through the food stamp program, which was really cool, actually, because we worked at low-income schools and neighborhoods, and we didn't talk about food stamps at all. We just worked in the eligible populations, and our job was to promote, more whole grains, fruits, vegetables, beans. So it wasn't a compromise in any way to do that job, and it was great work.
Mm-hmm. And then when did your endurance career kick off?
I always joke that I have trouble considering myself an athlete because I got into this in such a roundabout way. I grew up riding BMX and mountain biking and skateboarding, which are sort of non-traditional sports. And then after graduating Penn State, I rode my bike cross country just for fun. I didn't see it as a big physical endeavor. And then in California, I was bike commuting and then just started doing longer rides. And next thing I knew, I was doing centuries and double centuries, and it all kind of kicked off from there.
Okay, the bike ride across America, I assume that you did that plant-based, and how did that go, and how did you fuel it, and...
It was this was early 2000s, and I was very nervous about the middle of the country, and what I would be able to eat. And I didn't have much of a problem, honestly. And I ate a lot of peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. I remember I was eating one in Kansas on a little picnic table in a tiny town next to a gas station, and some rancher pulls up in a big truck and sees my bike and me and looks at my food and just says, "Peanut butter and jelly, that's little kids' food." But it worked for me.
Good. Yeah, it doesn't have to be complicated. I think that's in some of the classes that I've been trying to teach in my office, I think that's the scariest part. It's the first question is, what do I eat? And people don't realize that, probably 50% of what they do eat is plant-based. It's just, adding a few more into it, and it's, or some combination with rice and beans, and you're almost there.
Right.
And you did on your first blog was True Love Health, and then now we were talking that you've kind of merged over to StrongestHearts.org. But on True Love Health, you had some educational things there, too, of how to eat pretty cheaply, and then how you commuted, I think, and got your groceries all by bike. Are you still doing most of your commuting by bicycle?
Yeah, and it's something, Rich Roll had lots of questions about, was living in Southern California without a car. And it's a lot like the plant-based world where people just think it's this huge change and totally impossible. But once you do it and you get used to the habit, it's how you see the world, and it's actually not that difficult. Fortunately, I live in a neighborhood that's very walkable, so for most things I need, I don't even need to get on my bike. But yeah, for most of my longer trips and stuff through town and whatnot, I just hop on my bike and go, and it's great. And I know not everyone can do that, but it works for me pretty easily.
Yeah, it's not all that bike-friendly down here, but certainly it can't be any worse than Los Angeles, I guess. So. And when you did the Furnace Creek 500, how did you feel on that?
we run into this, how can I say this? With a lot of athletes, they need huge amounts of food, and there becomes a point where you just have to eat discretionary calories. You just have to be, you can't eat just beans and rice and broccoli and get 5,000 calories in a day. And so some of the stuff that I was eating wasn't traditionally healthy, but just used as fuel, just to fuel my, you know, 36-hour bike race. I like to eat, you know, things like pretzels are really good, just complex carbohydrates and a little bit of protein. Those work well. I mean, I did eat some bananas. You know, we would do banana and peanut butter wrapped in tortillas, so not that different from when I was bike touring. And then I eat a little bit of the supplemental stuff, you know, some of the Hammer Nutrition stuff where you're just drinking your calories, because honestly, you get tired of eating. You know, if you need 250 calories an hour for many, many hours, it gets to be a task to have to eat so much.
Yeah, that's been, you know, the issue with marathoning and then triathlon. One is, you know, like you say, you have to get a lot of calories in. And two, how do you transport it? You know, it's certainly easy. You know, there's a reason why they came up with those things in little packages. It's just easier to stuff a bunch in your pocket, you know.
Right. And I can only do so many dates. Dates are very popular with a lot of athletes, but they're just so sweet for me.
Very good. So, you co-authored the No Meat Athlete book. How did that all come about? How did you run into Matt?
You know, Matt is fantastic, man. He's super smart and a great writer. And we had gotten in touch a few years previous. I don't know how. I think it wasn't long after he started No Meat Athlete. And I had written for his site. I wrote something about iron. I wrote something about protein. And so when he got this book offer, we talked about, okay, should I be a co-author and go over all the nutrition stuff so that it's solid? And we agreed, and the publisher agreed, that would be a good idea. So I was really fortunate to write a long chapter in that and go over the rest of the book with him.
Yeah, that's a great book. I had him on the podcast as well, and you know, certainly he's rolled with that book, and his blog seems to be doing quite well. And so you've went on, so you got the writing bug, and now you've this book has not been released all that long, correct?
The cacao book came out in in September of last year, so not that long. And that's an interesting story, because it was the same publisher from No Meat Athlete. They contacted me and said, oh, we love the work that you did. You know, are you interested in writing a book in our superfood series? And I told them, you know, honestly, it's not really my thing. And they asked about chia, and I wasn't that interested. They asked about coconut, and I said, oh, I don't know. But they said cacao, you know, the bean that chocolate is made from. I thought, wow, this is a really unique experience to be able to write about cacao, because there's actually a lot of research. A lot of studies have come out of Harvard over the last two decades saying, hey, cacao is actually really good for you. And so I talked to a chef friend, Joshua Plogue, who's a co-author, and he said, yes, I would love to do 75 vegan recipes as long as they're mostly savory. So how cool is that? And I said, okay. I told the publisher, yeah, I would do it. And so that's how that book came about.
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of, when I first saw the title, it's like, geez, a book about cacao. So, you know, a bunch of chocolate recipes. But tell me a little bit about some of those, because they're very different than what you would expect when you start reading the book.
Yeah, very different. And, you know, we worried that people would think it was too weird. but part of the book is saying, hey, look at plants and how versatile they can be. And cacao is just one thing, one ingredient. And so we used it. He used it in a lot of sort of traditional Latin American ways. I mean, there's a mole, of course, which people know as a sauce that's savory, that's cacao-based. But we also have things like borscht, which is a beet soup that has cacao. And it's amazing how it works together, because they both have a very earthy taste. You know, and cacao also pairs well with avocado, with eggplant, with mushrooms. And it's been pretty well received. I think some people, it's a little too unique for their tastes, but we've gotten a lot of positive feedback on the recipes overall.
Mm-hmm. And which one is your favorite, by the way?
Yeah, that's a good question. I really like the borscht. I mean, I like stews, and so mixing those together works well. And the jerk tofu, I like strong seasoning, and so that's a good one. It's got, you know, curry in it, it's got cinnamon in it, plus it has the cacao powder in it, and so that's an excellent one.
In the, you know, the plant-based world has some sectioning, I guess is how to put it. You know, you have your your typical, the vegans, which basically eat what you want, but, you know, save the animals and, you know, be more, you know, ethically focused. And then you have, you know, your foodies, and then you have your strict low oil, you know, kind of group. I think it's somewhat, and then of course you have in that low oil group, you have, okay, you can eat starches, but don't eat nuts. And then you have the don't eat nuts, then don't eat any of that. You know, as a registered dietitian, you know, I go there a little bit. You know, the oil part of it is, you know, to kind of start again. Oil and cardiovascular reactivity. I was looking at one of your recipes, and you were talking about the flavonoids and the vasodilatation with cacao. Have they done the reactivity studies with cacao like they've done with, say, high-fat diets? Or high-fat, you know, I think it was the University of Maryland study where they gave the McMuffin to the medical students and watched the vasoreactivity and the paradoxical constriction. Have they done that with cacao and not seen a problem?
You know, I'm not sure. That's an excellent question, and I'm a little embarrassed that I don't have the answer to that. But not that I've seen, because maybe it hasn't been done.
Yeah, it would actually be kind of interesting, because you know you brought up with the beets having you know, stimulating nitric oxide, and of course that's typically how that vasodilatation works, and then the inflammation from saturated fats causes the vasoconstriction, but I don't know, you know, the flavonoids, you know, does cacao, you know, does that, I don't know how that works. So, yeah, well, I guess that's something to look into. Maybe it'd be worth something trying to play with.
Yeah, I mean, it is the mechanism in cacao is related to nitric oxide as well.
Mm. Yes.
And so that is seen as some of the benefits in addition to, like, the polyphenols.
And so how much saturated fat is in cacao?
You know, it is very high in saturated fat, but the specific fatty acid that it's high in is stearic acid, which we know doesn't raise cholesterol levels. Mm-hmm. And so that's the big difference in sort of what makes, you know, cacao an exception amongst high saturated fat foods.
So in your opinion, if... you know, like my patients were to, you know, it is tough. You know, you walk that line with them, the people with hyperlipidemia, then if they would start to cook more with cacao and maybe share that in some of their desserts, it would be less likely to drive their LDL, you think?
You know, based on everything I've read, you know, cacao does not raise LDL, and it should be okay. I think that an issue is... overeating it. You know, if people with dark chocolate, that's very hard to do, but with dark chocolate, it's hard to overeat, but with the less dark, it's really easy for people to eat an entire bar, you know? And I think that could have implications, but as far as having a little bit of cacao in your diet, I don't think it would affect cholesterol levels negatively.
And if you were just cooking with the cacao powder, as opposed to, you know, the chocolate bars.
Right. Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Have you heard of this healthy chocolate? Have you heard of this company that makes this so-called healthy chocolate?
No.
No. I'm not sure of it either. I had a couple patients, and it was kind of cute. You know, they were, it cures everything. And, you know, it was some sort of cold, you know, dark chocolate bars that were made somehow with cold press or whatever that basically, you know, made it better than regular chocolate. So I'm not entirely sure how it works, but you know, again, it was, you know, when the claim is it cures everything, then I kind of, you know,
right. And whenever, you know, people sell some sort of special technique, like the, you know, the special coffee that the bulletproof coffee guy sells. And really there's no evidence for that. It's not special in any real way.
And tell me about the research with Alzheimer's.
Yeah, that's interesting. Some people are calling Alzheimer's as a type 3 diabetes because of the way that the disease develops and how it may be related to insulin and to our arteries, which is fascinating. And that's about as much as I know about it, but they've done a lot of studies on memory with cacao. And they're showing that it could be positive. And my sort of take from that and my language that I use in the entire book is saying, okay, we have this evidence specific to cacao, but really plants themselves are superfoods. You know, and we may see similar benefits from other foods. We just haven't done those sort of studies. So it's something to definitely keep an eye on.
Would you go as far as to recommend a cacao in a daily smoothie?
You know, I think there's nothing wrong with it. I mean, it tastes good. It's easy to use. It's not that expensive, really, when you look at how much you're going to use in a day. So I think if you like it, why not? You know, if you're trying to be healthy, and this is where I worried about writing a book about superfoods, is that if you eat a standard American diet and you now want to be healthier, you know, adding cacao is not the first thing that I would recommend people do. And you know what I'm talking about with
exactly,
that, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. But if you have a healthy diet and you want to mix up your smoothie and you want to add a little bit of cacao, then yeah, absolutely. There's no reason not to, is the way that I would put that.
And I guess it would be better than putting the Hershey syrup in there.
Absolutely. Totally different products.
Yeah. I think all this comes down to finding out what, you know, if people are, you know, handfuls of nuts eaters, then, you know, any good food can be taken to extreme.
Right. And to go back to what you were bringing up earlier about all of these different philosophies among plant-based, I mean, there are just so many. And a lot of the private clients I work with come to me, and they're really intelligent folks who say, hey, look, I've read these 8 books, and they all contradict one another. What the heck do I actually eat? And that's when we say, you know, the science is pretty complicated, and you can draw, even if we're looking at, you know, quote, objective studies, the interpretation of them and of the studies in a whole can be very subjective. And so there's still a lot we don't know, is what I tell people. And what matters most is what 90% of our diet looks like. And a lot of us can agree on that, right? It's mostly whole plant foods, you know, not particularly high in fat. And then the minutiae is where we start to disagree a lot.
And then I think that, you know, you also take it if you have a very healthy individual that's an endurance athlete that has a low cholesterol and a negative family history, then they can probably get away with a lot more than my 45-year-old that everybody's died at 50 of heart disease patient that has high cholesterol and is struggling with their, you know, their weight. So I think all that has to be taken into context. There's, unfortunately, we try to pigeonhole everything, I guess.
Yeah, people want one answer. They want to say, oh, tell me exactly what to eat, nuts or no nuts, you know? And we don't know. I mean, 12 dietitians would give you 12 different answers, I think, about that. And that's okay. I mean, to me, that's sort of the beauty of science, is that there's a lot we don't know, and we're still discovering this. And you have, you know, Jeffrey Novick there in Florida, who's an RD, who's absolutely against nuts. And then you have the folks in Loma Linda who do tons of research and say, look, here's all this evidence that it's actually beneficial because of the polyunsaturated fats and the fiber and the, you know, micronutrients.
The getting back to the Loma Linda and the nuts, they were raw nuts, though, right? I mean, they weren't the traditional roasted planter nuts in the giant jar, right? I mean, those. Do you know?
You know, they do so much research on nuts. I imagine they've done both and looked at both, and I can't cite anything specifically to know if they're doing, you know, lower sodium ones or roasted or not roasted. But I do know that Seventh-day Adventist, which is who, you know, Loma Linda's doing most of their research on. It's funny, it sounds like they're stuck in labs or something. but the folks whose diets they're following, they eat quite differently than what we would think of as health food. They eat a lot of fake meat products. They don't eat exclusively whole grains. And I would imagine that they're not only eating raw nuts, that it is a variety of them, including, you know, salted and roasted.
Really? So, of course, that brings up, is there, you know, is there a genetic input there that, you know, allows that? Or are those things healthy or aren't as bad as we think they are?
Right. And it's there's so many factors to take into consideration, you know, with sodium and whatnot. But if you are eating a plant-based diet and you are eating more vegetables than the average American, which they do by far, then maybe like salted peanuts don't have quite the effect and they're not something that we would have to worry about as much. And that's sort of, you know, what we need to look at and figure out.
Where do you see this research going? I mean, what your next? You have a book. You're working on a book. What is the next one, if I may ask?
Oh, right now I'm just I'm working on a chapter, sort of a last minute thing here for a woman named Patricia Talman in Canada. She's a friend of Vicente Molina, who is the RD, who's the co-author of Becoming Vegan, which is an absolutely excellent book. I use it all the time. And this book, the Restore Our Planet Diet, I'm just doing one chapter in it. Very exciting book. I'm not sure what the exact release date is, but anyone who follows me will know when it's out. I'll be sure to share it.
Very good. And then I guess that would, where is your practice? What is your practice now? Where is it headed?
So I'm based in, you know, Los Angeles and San Diego area, and I see a lot of private clients. And what I'm focusing on now is doing a lot of speaking. I work with Engine 2. I speak at their week-long retreats. We have one coming up in May, which is great. It's with Dr. Esselstyn and, you know, his son Rip, you know, the author of the Engine 2 book. And that's a great time. And I'm still doing some talks and book signings related to the cacao book. And then always doing stuff with athletes, which is fun and I love to do. And I love to speak to them and help them to eat healthier. Because it's really, you know, I've been involved in this stuff for almost 20 years now. And the last 5 years have been incredible with the amount of people who are interested in plant-based diets for all the reasons, you know, health, environment, and animals.
So people seek you out knowing that you're plant-based for the most part?
Absolutely. You know, 95% of the people that come to me and want help are eating mostly plant-based, and they're doing, you know, I get everything from people who want to run their first 5K to I get some pretty intense ultra athletes from all over the world who have 60-hour-a-week jobs, and they're flying all over the world, and they're running 100-mile races, and it's really interesting for me, actually, to talk with some of these folks who are now doing plant-based in their crazy lives.
Yeah, I think that's very, very, very cool. I think that's where the video series that you have, I guess it's now on stronghearts.org.
Yep, Strongest Hearts.
Stronghearts.org. It's, I really enjoyed all of those.
Yeah, thank you so much. You know, I work with an excellent videographer named Sasha Perry, and we just show people, hey, look, this is what vegan athletes are doing. They're not preachy. They're just examples, and you know, they're professionally made, which is great. Like each one is like a mini documentary, you know. And we've worked with CrossFit athletes, power lifters, bodybuilders, runners, cyclists. It's really fun, and all the videos are free. I think we have 16 of them now, and they're all at strongesthearts.org.
Any thoughts on, you know, when I have done a couple Ironman, do a couple marathons a year. And typically when you finish one of these races, it's Domino's pizza, chicken wings. You might find some pasta with marinara sauce someplace, but the diet's not very healthy. And you know, and of course, even you have the places now where they're making the bars with the bacon and things.
Right.
Any thoughts on, you know, taking, I did interview Rip, and I asked him the same question, you know. Any chance of starting to infiltrate, or how hard is it, or has anybody asked you from some of these triathlon corporations, marathon corporations, to have a booth or to do some speaking in there? You know, usually they have you know, an educational series around their expo.
Yeah, I mean, that stuff needs to happen, and I think it's going to go in that direction. I know in Germany, where plant-based diets are really big right now, I've been communicating with a guy who has built this giant trailer that functions as a restaurant that he is going to bring to races so that there'll be healthy plant-based options for people to eat post-race, which is really cool. I'd love to see something like that in the U.S., and I would love to see, you know, more options. You know, I've seen the whole gamut from finishing a double century here in Southern California and not being able to eat a single thing because they put meat in the beans, to being in rural Pennsylvania for an ultra run, and they had totally separate vegan food, tons of options, you know, everything I could imagine or want was there for that race. So you see everything. But I think it is now moving more toward plant-based.
Why is Germany ahead of us?
I don't know. That's a great question, but they are very interested in veganism and plant-based diets, and I wish I had an answer for you, but I don't. You know, there's a film called Live and Let Live that comes out of Germany that you might be interested, actually. It's in English, but a guy named Mark, who I know you know, from another world, he made it, and he interviewed a lot of the folks who are involved in veganism and plant-based diets. And I think he's an example. He's also the one who put out the No Meat Athlete in German, which is great. And the Cacao book is also available in German. So the stuff is just blowing up there, and I really don't know why. I'm curious about it. I'd love to go and do some talks there, maybe.
Yeah, I heard Berlin. I mean, it was just vegan restaurant after vegan restaurant, which, you know, in my mind, when I hear Germany, I'm totally biased. I'm thinking, you know, the sour, the brats, you know, and the, but, you know, traditional, you know, sausages and things like that, and heavy lard-laden pastries.
Right, but they're doing it. I mean, I haven't been over there for a number of years at this point, but I've spent some time in Hamburg, and there were so many options. It was wonderful. It was fun. Really cool, and I can imagine it's only gotten bigger since I've been over there. So I'm going to try to get back there this summer, but we'll see if that can happen.
Yeah, that would be fantastic. And in your endurance life at this point, is there any room?
You know, I've actually, in the last couple of years, kind of taken a break from the endurance races and training and whatnot, and I'm actually been refocused on that. I've been running and cycling a lot more. And of course, I'll try to work that stuff in if I go over to Europe. You know, maybe I've done Paris Brest Paris in the past. I've done that Norseman Ironman in Norway. So there's lots of opportunities over there. And if I could tie that in with some speaking and stuff too, that would be pretty much ideal. You know, I'm pretty privileged to even have those opportunities.
That's fantastic. You were working in the schools. Where do you think that's going? I mean, it's how do we reach the young people? I've done a couple talks in local high schools, and you know, the cafeteria situation is horrible. A lot of the kids are on supported meals from the state or county around here. Mm-hmm. You know, if they're, you know, if the bad options are there, they're certainly going to take it. You know, where do you see that going?
It's tough, because what would happen is the schools would blame the parents and say, well, the kids don't eat healthy at home, so they're not going to eat anything healthy here. And then the, you know, parents blame the school and say, well, you don't serve anything healthy, so how are my kids supposed to eat healthy? And I think that it's multifaceted. I mean, like everything. And you have some resistance amongst the schools about healthy food, because they're worried about waste, which is a legitimate concern. So what do we do? I mean, it's really about kind of normalizing healthy eating. And I think it has a lot to do with our subsidies and with advertising. And it's very political. There's just not a lot of profit in broccoli, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of data is coming. There's Dr. McDougall, and then Ruth Heydrich, the PhD woman, I interviewed her, you know, had breast cancer, went on a plant-based diet, you know, cancer. She's been cancer-free for, you know, a lot of years. You know, what's your take on cancer prevention, cancer treatment with the plant-based diet?
Oof, I mean, it's tough. Of all the chronic diseases, I mean, cancer and diet, you know, I was at the Veg Congress, you know, at Loma Linda, which is every 5 years, which brings all these experts, and they talk about, you know, the epic Oxford study in England and then the Adventist Health Study, and we're saying, you know, plant-based diets probably help cancer, but we can't really make any strong statements. And we have a lot of anecdotal stuff about people getting healthy or, you know, getting cancer and then, you know, switching to plant-based. But, you know, do we know that that really works long term? It's tough. Will that work with a lot of people? Who knows? Like, what are the mechanisms? Well, we think that antioxidants play a role, and they probably do. But to what extent? I mean, there's really just so much we don't know with cancer. And so that's something that I speak very neutrally about.
Yeah, it's very. And then, you know, the role of it's pretty hard to do research. I was talking with Ruth and, you know, it's hard to get people to sign up for that. And, you know, even with Ruth, she talked about, you know, when she wanted to do it with Dr. McDougall and be plant-based and see how it went, you know, her family was totally adverse to it. And, you know, it makes doing research and then add in the legalities of truly looking at it makes it very difficult.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the research is just so complicated. I'm not a researcher. But you know, in graduate school, it turned into this thing where the more you learn about research and how much there is and how the studies are done, you think, wow, there's so much we really don't know.
Yeah. When I listened to your, Rich, I think Rich teased you quite a bit about, middle of the road, so to speak, quite a bit.
Yeah, and apparently I say it's complicated a lot, which my friends have since teased me about a lot. But it is very complicated, you know, if you really want to get into it. But there's just so many factors with risk, and it's just the way that risk works. And we know that a plant-based diet lowers your risk for so many things, and it doesn't increase your risk for anything, right? So why not, you know?
And tell me your role about, you know, you became this for the animals, or you became vegan for the animals, correct?
Yeah, that was my interest in all of this, was, you know, saying, hey, I don't want to kill animals. Can you be vegan and be healthy? And that's why I chose to go to school for this. And, you know, people say, oh, well, you're biased now. And I don't think that's the case. I think it's pointing out this evidence that exists that is overlooked, because in science it takes, you know, you have to have more evidence to overturn what is accepted as true. And that's a difficult thing. But this evidence is there. And so I'm happy just to point it out. And I'm very careful. You know, I don't say, oh, if you, you know, go vegan instead of paleo, you will definitely be healthier and you won't get cancer. It's like, I don't make those strong statements, but I say, hey, look, people are doing it and you can do it as well.
And the other thing that I've noticed, you know, since going plant-based, and I'm really relatively new, probably last 10 years, last 4 years, really strong and completely, but B12 and taking supplements, but in my practice, I don't see low B12s.
Oh, that's great. It is an issue, I think, for some people. Jack Norris, who does the veganhealth.org website, which is a fantastic resource, you know, that vegans think, oh, I'm vegan, I don't have to worry about anything. It's like, well, you actually do have to worry about B12. And I think people should take a B12 supplement. But I don't think that's an argument against veganism.
No, I don't either. But I've got to the point where I don't recommend it, you know, 3 or 4 times a week. I think, you know, most of the patients that I have been maintaining. So I don't know, you know, if they eat enough processed foods that, you know, they're absorbing little bits here and there. You know, certainly if somebody were completely whole foods, it may be a different situation. But it just seems like I've been surprised, you know, that and maybe they just haven't been plant-based long enough, the patients that I'm following as well. But I mean, I still recommend it, you know, by all means. But mm-hmm. I've seen more high levels than low levels.
Wow, interesting. You know, Clif Bars have it. If people are doing protein powders, those often have it. If you're doing soy milk, that has it. You know, the fake meats have it.
Yeah, so I do think it's in a lot more things than, you know, you realize. Any concerns with people going plant-based as far as, you know, besides B12, hints or, you know, be careful of or make sure you do?
You know, I think for most people, if they're eating truly whole foods and eating lots of fruits and vegetables, you know, way more than you're brought up on, there isn't much to be concerned about. For athletes and folks who need even more calories, I think iron can become an issue, but that's also true for omnivores. It's not specific to plant-based, but it is something we need to think about, because if you are really active, and if you're a woman, then your iron can get low, and that's something to think about.
And what would you recommend? Greens, beans, and vitamin C along with that, or?
Yeah, just the vitamin C containing foods. It doesn't have to be a supplement by any means. You know, a lot of these foods mix, right? Like rice and beans with salsa, for example. I think coffee and tea, you know, we have to be careful about, because it does interfere with absorption quite a bit. And I think that just that one change alone would probably help people, you know, in trying to separate those things.
And you've pretty much been in the outpatient, you know, any suggestions on, for the frail, you know, somebody comes out of the hospital and they're, maybe after a bypass, or, you know, my elderly population, and I'm trying to get them to go plant strong for their general health. Any recommendations above or beyond, you know, greens, beans, and lots of fruits and vegetables? You know, is there any way you'd lean?
You know, for folks who might have trouble eating such a large volume of food, right? Because you then have, you know, the general population, it's great that they're eating plant-based because the volume is so much larger. So it feels like you get to eat more food, but you lose weight. But then what's a benefit for those folks becomes a problem for little kids and the elderly, right? Who maybe don't have the stomach or the patience to consume such a large volume of food. So at that point, I think you need to consider some of the less, the lower volume foods, and maybe white rice. You know, if you're eating lots of veggies in a stir fry, maybe switch to white rice so that you can just get more calories in, you know, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that does.
You know, and again, nuts. You know, that's where nuts might play a role. And that's where, you know, healthy oils, you know, maybe a little bit of olive oil just to get those calories in. If you are still eating lots of veggies and mostly whole grains, I think it's okay to have some of those more calorically dense foods so that you can just make sure you're getting enough.
Mm-hmm. Avocados may play a role in that too. Then you could kind of mash those in a lot of things and hide them, I guess.
Right. Absolutely.
Very good. Because, you know, sometimes I'm trying to come up with ways to, you know, I have two populations. One I have to pump up and one I need to pump down.
Right.
It's easy to figure. It's easier to figure out how to get rid of the calories, you know, usually than it is to add them on, as far as in people that just don't have much of an appetite.
Right. Absolutely.
Very good. All right. Well, you know, it's certainly been a pleasure. And where are you speaking at anytime soon?
You know, I have a couple of events in Austin, Texas, in maybe 2 weeks, I believe, as part of the Engine 2 28-day challenge. And those are both at Whole Foods in the Austin area. And they've combined it, even though it's, you know, the cacao book isn't exactly an Engine 2 book. They're letting me do a book signing and speak about Engine 2 stuff. So that'll be fun. And those events are, I believe, February 5th and 7th in Austin, Texas. And then I have the Engine 2 events in May. We're doing a small series here in San Diego, which I'm looking forward to in March. And that's what I can think of off the top of my head that I'm up to.
Great. And if someone wanted to get a hold of you to, you know, be a consult with you, how would they do that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the majority of my consults are long distance, you know, so I'm very used to using Skype and whatnot because people from all over the world find me. And they can email me. My name, mattrastigno@gmail.com works, as does truelovehealth@gmail.com, which is a little bit easier to spell than my last name. And so, yeah, anyone can get in contact with me from anywhere.
Very good. Well, thank you very much for taking time out of your busy schedule to speak with me. It's been a pleasure, and I'll look forward to reading your next book and doing some of these crazy recipes.
Great. Well, thank you so much for having me and for all that you do. It's really an honor to be involved with this, so thank you.
All right. Thanks. Good afternoon.
Great. Take care.
Well, I hope you enjoyed the interview with Matt. I certainly did, and I've since tried several of the recipes, and they're very interesting and good. I'm going to keep trying different ones, work my way into some of the desserts, and it was very interesting read, so highly suggest you check out his book. I thought before I closed I'd give you a few interesting tidbits of what I hear in my office in either my plant-based wellness class or from patients to just let you know what we're up against. One patient comes in and her primary care doctor suggested that she eat only white bread, no vegetables or fruit, and she could have chicken and fish. So she promptly gained weight and let that theory go. And by the way, that physician is morbidly obese. There's another person that her physician basically poo-pooed the plant-based diet and was very afraid that her BMI was going to drop too low. She's currently at a very healthy weight and very active. And again, this physician is overweight. So I don't think people realize what a normal weight is anymore. We should all go back and watch some of the old Jack LaLanne videos where he says if you can pinch an inch, then yeah, you're probably too heavy. I think the norm has really shifted, and it's a sad thing. Again, that was exemplified when I was out at the True North Clinic. Dr. Goldhammer looked about 20 years, and Dr. Clapper looked about 20 years younger than their current chronologic age on a plant-based, no salt, no oil, no sugar diet. So Chef AJ also follows that. So there's so many people that look so healthy on a plant-based diet that I think, again, if you're going to trust somebody, trust a doctor that looks healthy as opposed to one that's just throwing a pill at you. So anyway, we'll continue to try to educate and interview people on a plant-based diet and endurance athletes and get more information. If you have any questions for me, you can contact me at jamiedelaney@gmail.com. Certainly the input is appreciated. And until next time, be plant strong.